way, he said, trying to sound casual. Am I ever going to have a chance to meet the young man who likes my daughter? She slid past him into the sunlight. Probably. How about inviting him over for dinner? And maybe afterwards we can, you know, do what we used to do, her dad said tentatively. Ronnie thought about it. I don't know, Dad. It can get kind of heated. I'll tell you what. I'll let you decide. Okay?
Chapter 18. Will. Come on, man. You've got to keep your head in the game. If you do that, we'll crush Landry and Tyson in the tournament. Will tossed the ball from one hand to the other as he and Scott stood in the sand, still sweating from the final volleys. It was late afternoon. They'd finished up at the garage at 3 and had raced over to the beach for a scrimmage against a couple of teams from Georgia that were spending the week in the area. They were all preparing for the Southeastern Tournament later that August, which was going to be held at Wrightsville Beach. They haven't lost yet this year, and they just won the Junior Nationals, Will pointed out. So? We weren't there. They beat a bunch of scrubs. In Will's humble opinion, the competition at the Junior National Tournament weren't scrubs. In Scott's world, however, anyone who lost was a scrub. They beat us last year. Yes, but last year you were even worse than you are now. I had to carry the entire load. Thanks. I'm just saying, you're inconsistent. Like yesterday, after that chick from the Lost Boys stormed off, you played the rest of the game like you were blind. She's not the chick from the Lost Boys. Her name is Ronnie. Whatever. Do you know what your problem is? Yes, Scott, please tell me my problem, Will thought. I'm dying to hear what you think. Scott went on, oblivious to Will's thoughts. Your problem is that you're not focused. One little thing happens and you're off in Never Never Land. Oh, I spilled Elvira's soda on her, so I'll miss the next 5 digs. Oh, Vampira got mad at Ashley, so I better miss the next 2 serves. Would you stop? Will interrupted. Scott seemed confused. Stop what? Stop calling her names. See, that's exactly what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about her. I'm talking about you and your lack of focus, your inability to concentrate on the game. We just won 2 straight sets, and they only scored 7 points total. We crushed them, Will protested. But they shouldn't have even had 5 points. We should have shut them out. Are you serious? Yeah, I'm serious. They're not very good. But we won. Isn't that enough? Not if you could win by more. We could have broken their spirit so that when they meet us in the tournament, they'd give up before the game even starts. It's called psychology. I think it's called running the score up. Well, that's just because you're not thinking straight, or you never would have ended up mashing faces with Cruella de Vil. Elvira, Vampira, and now Cruella. At least, Will thought, he wasn't recycling any material. I think you're jealous, Will said. No. Personally, I think you should go out with Ashley so I can go out with Cassie. You're still thinking about that? Hello? Who else would I be thinking about? You should have seen her in her bikini yesterday. So ask her out. She won't go. Scott frowned in consternation. It's like a package deal or something. I don't understand it. Maybe she thinks you're ugly. Scott glared at him before forcing out a fake laugh. Ha ha! That is so funny. You should really try booking yourself on Letterman. His glare remained fixed on Will. I'm just saying. Well, don't, okay? And what is it with you and... Ronnie? Yeah. What was that about? Yesterday you spent your whole day off with her, and then she shows up this morning and you kiss her? Are you, like, serious about her or something? Will remained silent. Scott shook his head as he raised a finger, emphasizing his point. See? Here's the thing. The last thing you need is to get serious with a girl. You need to concentrate on what's important. You've got a full-time job. You volunteer trying to save the dolphins or whales or turtles or whatever. And you know how much we have to practice to get ready for the tournament. You don't have enough time as it is. Will said nothing, but he could see Scott growing more panicked with every passing second. Aw, come on, man. Don't do this to me. What on earth do you see in her? Will said nothing. No, 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 Scott repeated like a mantra. I knew this was going to happen. That's why I told you to go out with Ashley, so you wouldn't get serious again. You know what's going to happen. You're going to turn into a hermit. You're going to blow off your friends so you can hang out with her. Trust me, the last thing you need is to get serious with... Ronnie, Will filled in. Whatever, Scott snapped. You're missing the point. Will smiled. Did you ever realize you have more opinions about my life than your own life? That's because I don't mess things up like you do. Will gave an involuntary twitch, flashing back to the night of the fire and wondering if Scott was really so clueless. I don't want to talk about it, Will said, but he realized that Scott wasn't listening. Instead, his gaze was focused over Will's shoulder on a spot down the beach. You've got to be kidding, Scott mumbled. Will turned around and saw Ronnie approaching, in jeans and a dark T-shirt, of course, looking as out of place as a crocodile in Antarctica. A huge grin spread over his face. He started toward her, drinking in the sight of her, wondering again what she was thinking. He loved the fact that he couldn't completely figure her out. Hey, he said, reaching for her. She stopped, just out of reach. Her expression was serious. Don't kiss me. Just listen, okay? Sitting beside him in the truck, Ronnie remained as enigmatic as ever. She stared out the window, smiling faintly, seemingly content to watch the scenery. But after a few minutes, she brought her hands together in her lap and turned to face him. I want you to know my dad won't care that you're wearing shorts and a tank top. It's only going to take a few minutes. But it's supposed to be a casual dinner. I'm hot and sweaty. I'm not going to come to your house for dinner with your dad dressed like a bum. But I just said he won't care. I care, though. Unlike some people, I like to make a good impression. Ronnie bristled. Are you saying I don't? Of course not. For instance, everyone I know loves to meet people with purple hair. Though she knew he was teasing, her eyes widened and then narrowed suddenly. You don't seem to have a problem with it. Yes, but that's because I'm special. She crossed her arms and stared at him. Are you going to be like this all night? Like what? Like someone with no shot of ever, ever kissing me again? He laughed and turned toward her. I apologize. I didn't mean it. And actually, I like the purple streaks. It's who you are. Yeah, well, you'll just have to learn to be more careful with what you say next time. As she spoke, she opened his glove compartment and began sifting through it. What are you doing? Just looking. Why, are you hiding something? Feel free to sort through all of it. And while you're at it, maybe you could straighten it up a bit. She pulled out a bullet and held it up so he could see. I suppose this is what you use to kill ducks, right? No, that's for deer. It's too big for a duck. The duck would be shredded to pieces if I shot it with that. You have serious problems, you know. So I've heard. She giggled before settling into silence. They were on the intracoastal side of the island, and between the ever-growing sprawl of houses, the sun was glinting off the water. She closed the glove compartment and lowered the visor. Noticing a photograph of a lovely blonde, she pulled it out and examined it. She's pretty, Ronnie commented. Yeah, she is. $10 says you posted this on your Facebook page. You lose. That's my sister. He watched as her gaze flickered from the photo to his wrist, eyeing the macrame wristband. "What's with the matching bracelets?" she asked. "My sister and I make them. To support a worthy cause, no doubt." "No," he said. And when he said nothing else, he was impressed that she seemed to intuit that he didn't want to say anything more. Instead, she carefully tucked the photo back in place and lifted the visor again. "How far away do you live?" Ronnie asked. "We're almost there," Will assured her. "If I'd known it was this far away, I would have walked home. Since we're heading farther and farther away from my house, I mean. But you would have missed my scintillating conversation. Is that what you call it?" "Do you plan on insulting me some more?" he glanced at her. "I just need to know whether or not to turn up the music so I don't have to hear it. You know, you shouldn't have kissed me earlier. It wasn't exactly romantic," Ronnie shot back. "I thought it was very romantic. We were in a garage. You had grease on your hands, and your buddy was gawking." "A perfect setting," he said. As he slowed the car, he flipped down his visor. Then, after making a turn, he came to a stop as he pressed the remote. Two wrought iron gates slowly slid open, and the truck rolled forward again. Excited at the prospect of having dinner with Ronnie's family later that evening, Will didn't seem to notice that Ronnie had gone quiet.
Chapter 19. Ronnie. Okay, she thought. This was ridiculous. Not just the grounds with the sculptured rose gardens and hedges and marble statues, or the massive Georgian mansion flanked by columns, or even the overpriced exotic cars that were being waxed by hand in an area reserved for such things, but all of it. It wasn't just ridiculous. It was beyond ridiculous. Yeah, she knew there were rich people in New York with 23-room apartments on Park Avenue and houses in the Hamptons, but it wasn't as if she'd ever spent time with those people or been invited to those homes. The closest she'd ever come to seeing a place like this was in magazines. And even then, most of those had been flyover shots taken by paparazzi. And here she was, wearing a t-shirt and torn jeans. Nice. At the very least, he could have warned her. She continued to stare at the house as the truck zipped up the drive, turning into the roundabout in front of the house. He came to a stop directly in front of the entrance. She turned to him and was about to ask whether he actually lived here, then realized it was a stupid question. Obviously, he lived here. By then, he was already getting out of the truck. Following suit, she opened her door and stepped outside. The two men washing the cars glanced at her before quickly going back to work. "Like I said, I'm just going to rinse off. It won't take long." "Fine," she said. Really, there wasn't anything else she could think to say. It was the largest house she'd ever seen in her life. She followed him up the steps that led to the porch and paused briefly at the door, just long enough to see a small brass plaque posted near the door that read, "The Blakeleys." As in, Blakely Brakes. As in, the national automotive chain. As in, Will's dad didn't simply own an individual franchise, but had probably started the entire business. She was still trying to process that simple fact as Will pushed open the door and led her into a massive foyer centerpieced by a grand staircase. A dark paneled library beckoned on her right, while some kind of music room opened to the left. Directly ahead lay a huge, sun-filled open room, and beyond that, she saw the sparkling waters of the Intracoastal Waterway. "You didn't tell me your last name was Blakely," Ronnie mumbled. "You didn't ask." He gave an indifferent shrug. "Come on in." He led her past the staircase toward the great room. At the back of the house, she saw a massive covered veranda. Near the water, she caught sight of what could only be described as a mid-sized yacht parked at the dock. Okay, she admitted it. She felt out of place here. And the fact that everyone probably felt out of place the first time they came here was no consolation. She might as well have landed on Mars. Can I get you something to drink while I get ready? No, I'm okay. Thanks, she said, trying not to gawk at her surroundings. You want me to show you around first? I'm fine. Somewhere ahead and off to the side, she heard a voice calling out. Well, did I hear you come in? Ronnie turned to see an attractive woman in her early 50s wearing an expensive linen pantsuit and holding a wedding magazine step into view. Hey, Mom, he said. He tossed his truck keys into a bowl perched on the entry table, right next to the vase of fresh-cut lilies. I brought someone over. This is Ronnie. And this is my mom, Susan.
Oh, hello, Ronnie, Susan said coolly.
Though Susan tried to hide it, Ronnie could tell she wasn't pleased about having been surprised by Will's unexpected guest. Her displeasure, Ronnie couldn't help but think, had less to do with the unexpected part than the guest part. Namely, her. But if Ronnie noticed the tension, Will obviously didn't. Maybe Ronnie thought it was a woman thing to be able to sense things like that, because Will went on chatting with his mom with casual ease. Is Dad around? He asked.
I believe he's in his office.
Before I go, I need to talk to him. Susan shifted the magazine from one hand to the other.
You're leaving?
I'm having dinner with Ronnie's family tonight.
Oh, she said. That's wonderful.
You'll like this. Ronnie's a vegetarian.
Oh,
Susan said again, turning to scrutinize Ronnie.
Is that right?
Ronnie felt as if she were shrinking. Yes.
Interesting,
Susan said. While Ronnie could see that it was anything but interesting to Susan, Will remained oblivious. Okay, so I'm just going to pop upstairs for a few minutes. I'll be right back. Though Ronnie felt like telling him to hurry, she didn't. Okay, she offered instead. With a couple of long, loping steps, he was heading up the stairs, leaving Ronnie and Susan facing each other. In the ensuing silence, Ronnie was acutely conscious of the fact that as little as they had in common, they were united in their unhappiness at being left alone with each other. Ronnie felt like strangling Will. The least he could have done was warn her.
So,
Susan said, forcing a smile. She looked almost plastic.
You're the one with the turtle nest behind your house.
That's me. Susan nodded. She'd obviously run out of things to say, so Ronnie struggled to fill the silence. She motioned toward the foyer.
You have a beautiful home. Thank you.
With that, Ronnie was at a loss for words, and for a long moment, they faced each other awkwardly. She had no idea what would have happened if the two of them had remained alone. But thankfully, they were joined by a man in his 50s or early 60s, dressed casually in Dockers and a polo.
I thought I heard someone come in, he said, walking toward them.
His demeanor was friendly, almost jocular, as he approached.
I'm Tom, a.k.a. Will's dad, and you're Ronnie, right?
It's a pleasure to meet you, she responded.
I'm glad I finally had the chance to meet the girl he's been talking about.
Susan cleared her throat. Will is going to be joining Ronnie and her family for dinner. Tom turned toward Ronnie.
I hope you don't make anything fancy. The kid lives on pepperoni pizza and burgers.
Ronnie is a vegetarian, Susan added.
Ronnie couldn't help noticing that Susan said it in the same way another person might have said she was a terrorist. Or maybe not. Ronnie couldn't exactly tell. Will really, really should have warned her about what to expect, so she could have at least been prepared. But Tom, like Will, didn't seem to notice.
No kidding! That's great. At least he'll eat healthy for a change.
He paused.
I know you're waiting for Will, but do you have a few minutes? I want to show you something.
I'm sure she's not interested in your airplane, Tom, Susan protested.
I don't know. Maybe she is, he said.
Turning to Ronnie, he asked,
Do you like airplanes?
Of course, she thought. Why wouldn't the family have an airplane? Let's just add that to the equation. This whole mess was Will's fault. She was going to kill him as soon as she got out of here. But what choice did she have? Yeah, she said. Of course I like airplanes. She supposed she had an image in mind. A Learjet or Gulfstream, parked in a personal hangar on the far side of the property. But it was a fuzzy image, since the only private jets she'd ever seen were in photographs. Still, this wasn't what she'd expected at all. The sight of someone older than her father flying a remote-controlled toy airplane and concentrating on the controls. The plane whined as it skirted over the trees, swooping low over the intracoastal waterway.
I've always wanted one of these things, and I finally broke down and got one. Actually, this is the second one. The first one accidentally ended up in the water.
That's too bad, Ronnie sympathized.
Yeah, but it taught me that I should probably read all the directions next time.
Did you crash it?
No, it ran out of gas.
He glanced at her. Do you want to try? I better not, Ronnie demurred. I'm not good at things like that.
It's not too hard, Tom assured her.
This is one of the beginner planes.
It's supposed to be idiot-proof. Of course, the last one was too, so what does that tell you?
That maybe you should have read the directions?
Right, he said.
There was something about the way he said it that made him sound just like Will.
Did you and Susan talk about the wedding?
He asked. Ronnie shook her head. No. Will mentioned something about it, though. I had to spend 2 hours today at the florist looking at flower arrangements. Have you ever spent 2 hours looking at flower arrangements? No.
Consider yourself lucky.
Ronnie giggled, relieved to be out here with him. Just then, Will came up behind her, freshly showered and dressed neatly in a polo shirt and shorts. Both name brand, but she supposed she should have expected that.
You'll have to forgive my dad. He sometimes forgets he's an adult, Will quipped. At least I'm honest. And I didn't see you racing home to help.
I had a volleyball game.
Yeah, I'm sure that was the reason.
And I gotta tell you, Ronnie here is a whole lot prettier than you let on. Though Ronnie smiled with pleasure, Will cringed.
Dad. It's true, Tom added quickly.
Don't be embarrassed. After making sure the plane was flying straight again, he glanced at Ronnie.
He gets embarrassed a lot. He used to be the shyest kid in the world.
He couldn't even sit near a pretty girl without his cheeks turning bright red. Will, meanwhile, was shaking his head in disbelief. I can't believe you're saying this, Dad, right in front of her.
What's the problem? Tom looked at Ronnie. Does that bother you?
Not at all.
See?
He tapped Will's chest as if he'd proved his point.
She doesn't care.
Thanks for that, he grimaced.
What are dads for?
Hey, you want to give this thing a whirl? I really can't. I'm supposed to bring Ronnie home so we can have dinner.
Listen to me. Even if they serve you eggplant on rutabaga with tofu, I want you to eat what they put in front of you and then make sure you compliment them on the meal, Tom admonished.
It'll probably just be pasta, Ronnie said, grinning.
Really?
Tom seemed disappointed.
He'll eat that.
What? You don't want me to eat?
It's always good to experience new things.
How'd it go at the shop today? That's what I needed to talk to you about. Jay said there's a problem with the computer or the software. Everything keeps double printing.
Just at the flagship or everywhere?
I don't know. Tom sighed.
I suppose I'd better check it out then. Assuming, of course, I can land this thing. And you two have a good time, okay?
A few minutes later, after getting into the truck, Will jingled his keys before starting the engine.
Sorry about that. My dad sometimes says the craziest things.
Don't be sorry. I like him. And I wasn't that shy, by the way. My cheeks never turned bright red.
Of course they didn't.
I'm serious. I was always smooth.
I'm sure you were,
she said, reaching over to pat his knee. But listen, about tonight. My family has this weird tradition.
You're lying, Will shouted. You've been lying all night and I'm sick and tired of it.
Don't even go there, Ronnie shouted back. You're the one who's lying. The dishes from dinner had long ago been cleared. Dad had served spaghetti and marinara sauce, as predicted, with Will making sure to clean his plate. And they were now sitting at the kitchen table, holding playing cards to their foreheads in a game of liar's poker. Will was holding an 8 of hearts, Steve a 3 of hearts, and Jonah a 9 of spades. Piles of change were stacked in front of each of them, and the pot in the middle overflowed with nickels and dimes.
You're both lying, Jonah added. Neither of you knows how to tell the truth.
Will offered Jonah his game face and reached into his pile of change.
A quarter says you don't know what you're talking about.
Her dad started shaking his head.
Bad move, young man. It's over. I'm going to have to raise you 50 cents.
I'll see that, Ronnie cried.
Both Jonah and Will immediately followed suit. They paused, all of them eyeing one another before slapping their cards down on the table. Ronnie, seeing that she'd been holding an 8, surmised that they'd all lost to Jonah. Again.
You're all liars, he said.
His winnings, she noticed, were twice as much as anyone else's. And as she watched her brother drag the change pile toward him, she observed that at least to this point, the evening had gone pretty well. She hadn't known what to expect when she'd brought Will over, since it was the first time she'd ever brought a boy to meet her father. Would he try to give them space by hiding out in the kitchen? Would he try to become buddies with Will? Would he do or say something that embarrassed her? On the drive to her house, she'd already begun thinking of escape plans she could use as soon as they finished dinner. As soon as they stepped inside, however, she had a good feeling. For starters, the house was picked up. Jonah was obviously under orders not to cling to their sides or question Will like a prosecutor. And her dad met Will with a simple handshake and an easygoing, "It's a pleasure to meet you." Will was on his best behavior, of course, answering questions with, "Yes, sir," and "No, sir," which struck her as endearing in a southern kind of way. The dinner conversation was easy. Her dad asked some questions about the work Will did at the garage and at the aquarium, and Jonah went so far as to put his napkin in his lap. Best of all, her father didn't say anything embarrassing, and though he brought up the fact that he used to teach at Juilliard, he didn't volunteer that he'd been her teacher, or that she'd once played at Carnegie Hall, or that they'd written songs together. Nor had he mentioned the fact that until a few days ago, he and Ronnie had been completely estranged. When Jonah asked for cookies after he'd finished, both Ronnie and her dad burst out laughing, making Will wonder what was so funny. Together, the four of them pitched in to clean up the table. And when Jonah suggested that they play liar's poker, Will had agreed enthusiastically. As for Will, he was just the kind of guy her mom wanted Ronnie to date. Polite, respectful, intelligent, and best of all, sans tattoos. It might have been nice to have her mom there, if only to assure her that her daughter hadn't gone completely off the deep end. On the other hand, her mom probably would have been so excited about the whole thing that she would have either tried to adopt Will on the spot or gushed to Ronnie a million times after he was gone about what a nice young man he was, which only would have made Ronnie want to end the whole thing before her mom got too carried away. Her dad would do none of those things. He seemed to trust Ronnie's judgment and was content to let her make her own decisions without inserting his own opinions. Which was really weird, considering he was only just starting to get to know her again, and also kind of sad at the same time, because she was beginning to think she'd made a big mistake by avoiding him for the past 3 years. It might have been nice to talk to him when her mom was driving her crazy. All in all, she was glad she'd invited Will over. It certainly was easier for him to meet her dad than it had been for Ronnie to meet Susan. The woman scared the living daylights out of her. Well, maybe that was an exaggeration, but she was definitely intimidated. The woman had made it abundantly clear that she either didn't like Ronnie or didn't like the fact that her son liked Ronnie. Normally, she wouldn't have cared what someone's parent thought of her, and she wouldn't have given a second thought to the way she'd been dressed. She was who she was, after all. This was the first time in what seemed like forever that she'd felt she didn't measure up, and it had bothered her far more than she'd thought it would. As darkness fell and the game of liar's poker began to wind down, she sensed Will watching her. She returned his gaze with a smile.
"I'm almost out," he announced, fingering his pile of change.
"I know. I am, too." He glanced toward the window. "Do you think it would be okay if we went for a walk?" This time, she knew with certainty that he was asking because he wanted to spend some time alone with her, because he cared about her, even if he was unsure whether she felt the same way. She met his eyes directly. "I'd love to go for a walk."
Chapter 20. Will. The beach stretched for miles, separated from Wilmington by the bridge over the intracoastal waterway. It had changed, of course, since Will was a kid, growing more congested in the summers. Small bungalows like the one where Ronnie was living replaced by imposing oceanfront mansions. But he still loved the ocean at night. When he was young, he used to ride his bike over to the beach in the hope of seeing something interesting, and he was almost never disappointed. He'd seen large sharks washed up on the beach, sand castles so intricate they could have won any national competition, and once he'd even spotted a whale not 50 yards from shore, rolling in the water just beyond the surf. Tonight, the place was deserted, and as he and Ronnie strolled barefoot through the breaking surf, he was struck by the thought that this was the girl with whom he'd like to face the future. He knew he was too young for such thoughts and was under no illusion that he was even considering marriage, but somehow he felt that if he met Ronnie 10 years from now, she might be the one. He knew Scott wouldn't understand the concept. Scott seemed unable to imagine a future that stretched past the upcoming weekend. But then Scott wasn't so different from most of his peers. It was as if their minds ran on separate tracks. He wasn't into one-night stands. He wasn't into scoring to see if he could. He wasn't into acting just charming enough to get what he wanted before cutting someone loose in favor of someone new and attractive. He just wasn't like that. He would never be like that. When he met a girl, the first question he asked himself wasn't whether she was good for a few dates. It was whether she was the kind of girl he could imagine spending time with over the long haul. He supposed that had partly to do with his parents. They'd been married for 30 years, started out struggling as many couples did, and over the years had built the business and raised a family. Through it all, they had loved each other well, celebrating their successes and supporting each other during tragedy. Neither of them was perfect, but he'd grown up certain that they were a team, and eventually, he'd absorbed that lesson. It was easy to think that he'd spent 2 years with Ashley because she was beautiful and rich, and though he'd be lying if he said that her beauty was irrelevant, it was less important than the things he thought he saw in her. She'd listened to him just as he'd listened to her. He'd believed he could tell her anything and vice versa. But over time, he'd felt increasingly disappointed in her, especially when she'd tearfully admitted that she'd made out at a party with some guy from the local college. Things were never the same after that. Not because he worried that she'd do something like that again. Everyone made mistakes, and it had only been a kiss. But somehow the incident helped crystallize his thoughts about what he wanted from the people he was closest to. He began to notice the way she treated other people, and he wasn't sure he liked what he saw. Her ceaseless gossiping, once something he considered harmless, began to annoy him, as did the long waits she made him endure while she readied herself to go out at night. He felt bad about eventually breaking up with her, but consoled himself with the fact that he'd only been 15 when he first started dating her, and she was the first girlfriend he'd ever had. In the end, he felt he had no other choice. He knew who he was and what was important to him, and he didn't see any of that reflected in Ashley. He figured it was better just to end the relationship before things got any harder. His sister Megan was like him that way. Beautiful and smart, she'd intimidated most of the boys she'd ever dated. For a long time, she had flitted from one guy to the next, but not out of vanity or flightiness. When he'd asked why she seemed unable to settle down, her answer had been straightforward. There are guys who grow up thinking they'll settle down some distant time in the future, and there are guys who are ready for marriage as soon as they meet the right person. The former bore me, mainly because they're pathetic, and the latter, quite frankly, are hard to find. But it's the serious ones I'm interested in, and it takes time to find a guy like that whom I'm equally interested in. I mean, if the relationship can't survive the long term, why on earth would it be worth my time and energy for the short term? Megan. He smiled, thinking about her. She lived her life by her own rules. She had driven Mom crazy during the last 6 years with her attitude, of course, since she'd quickly eliminated pretty much every guy in town who hailed from the kind of family of which his mother approved. But he had to admit he thought Megan had gotten it right, and thankfully she'd been able to meet a guy in New York who satisfied all her criteria. In a strange way, Ronnie reminded him of Megan. She was an oddball, a free thinker, and stubbornly independent, too. On the surface, she was unlike anyone he could ever imagine finding attractive, but her dad was great, her brother was a hoot, and she was just about as smart and caring as anyone he'd ever met. Who else would camp out all night to protect a turtle nest? Who else would stop a fight to help a little kid? Who else read Tolstoy in her spare time? And who else, at least in this town, would fall for Will before knowing anything about his family? That, he had to admit, was important to him too, as much as he wished it weren't. He loved his dad and his family name, and he was proud of the business his dad had built. He appreciated the advantages that his life had brought him, but he wanted to be his own person, too. He wanted people to know him first as Will, not Will Blakely, and there wasn't another person in the world he could talk to about it, other than his sister. It wasn't as if he lived in Los Angeles, where celebrity kids could be found in every school, or was at a place like Andover, where practically everyone knew someone who came from a famous family. It wasn't so easy in a place like this, where everyone knew everybody, and as he'd grown older, he'd grown somewhat cautious about his friendships. He was willing to talk to almost anyone, but he'd learned to put up an invisible wall, at least until he was certain his family had nothing to do with the new acquaintance or was the reason a girl seemed to be interested in him. And if he hadn't known for certain that Ronnie knew nothing about his family, he'd been convinced when he'd pulled up in front of his house. "What are you thinking about?" he heard her ask. A light breeze rippled through her hair, and she tried in vain to collect the strands into a loose ponytail. "You've been kind of quiet." "I was thinking about how much I enjoyed coming over." "To our little house? It's a bit different from what you're used to." "Your house is great," he insisted, "and so is your dad and Jonah, even though he crushed me in liar's poker." "He always wins, but don't ask me how. I mean, ever since he was little, I think he cheats, but I haven't figured out how."
"Maybe you just need to lie better."
"Oh, you mean like you telling me you work for your dad?"
"I do work for my dad," Will said.
"You know what I mean."
"Like I told you, I didn't think it mattered." He stopped walking and turned to her.
"Does it?"
She seemed to choose her words carefully.
"It's interesting, and it helps explain a few things about you, but if I told you that my mom worked as a paralegal at a Wall Street law firm, would you feel any different about me?"
This, he knew, he could answer with complete honesty.
"No,
but it's different."
"Why?" she asked. "Because your family is rich?" A statement like that only makes sense to someone who thinks that money is all that matters.
"I didn't say that."
"Then what did you mean?" she challenged, then shook her head. "Look, let's get one thing straight. I don't care if your dad is the Sultan of Brunei. You happen to be born into a privileged family.
What you do with that truth is completely up to you. I'm here because I want to be with you. But if I didn't, all the money in the world wouldn't have changed my feelings about you. As she spoke, he watched her growing more animated. Why do I get the feeling you've given that speech before? Because I have said it before. She stopped walking and turned to face him. Come to New York and you'll understand why I've learned to say what I mean. In some clubs, all you meet are snobs, and they're so into who their family is or how much their family makes. It bores me. I stand there, and all I want to say is, it's great that others in your family have done something, but what have you done? But I don't, because they don't get it. They think they're the chosen ones. It's not even worth getting mad about, because the whole idea is so ridiculous. But if you think I invited you over because of who your family is, I didn't, he said, cutting her off. I never thought that for a second. In the darkness, he knew she was considering whether he was telling the truth or simply saying what she wanted to hear. Hoping to put an end to the discussion, he turned and motioned behind them toward the workshop near the house. What's that place? He asked. She didn't answer right away, and he sensed she was still trying to decide whether she believed him. It came with the house, she said at last. My dad and Jonah are making a stained glass window this summer. Your dad makes stained glass windows? He does now. Is that what he's always done? No, she answered. Like he told you at dinner, he used to teach piano. She paused to brush something from her feet, then changed the subject. What's next for you? Are you going to keep working for your dad? He swallowed, resisting the temptation to kiss her again. I will until the end of August. I'm going to Vanderbilt in the fall. From one of the houses up the beach drifted the faint strains of music. Squinting into the distance, Will could see a group congregated on the back deck. The song was something from the 80s, though he couldn't pinpoint it. That should be fun. I guess. You don't sound very excited. Will took her hand and they began to stroll again. It's a great school and the campus is beautiful, he recited a little awkwardly. She studied him. But you don't want to go there? Ronnie seemed to intuit his every feeling and thought, which was both disconcerting and a source of relief. At least he could tell her the truth. I wanted to go somewhere else, and I got accepted at a school that has this incredible environmental science program, but my mom really wanted me to go to Vanderbilt. He could feel the sand sliding between his toes as he walked. Do you always do what your mom wants? You don't understand, he said, shaking his head. It's a family tradition. My grandparents went there, my parents went there, my sister went there. My mom is on the board of trustees, and she... He struggled to find the right words. Beside him, he could sense Ronnie watching him, but he couldn't meet her gaze. I know that she can be kind of distant when people meet her for the first time, but once you get to know her, she's the truest person in the world. She would do anything, I mean anything, for me. But the last few years have been really hard for her. He stopped to pick out a seashell from the sand. After examining it, he sent it arcing toward the waves. Do you remember when you asked about the bracelet? Ronnie nodded, waiting for him to go on. My sister and I wear the bracelets in honor of our little brother. His name was Mike, and he was a great little guy. The kind of kid who was happiest when he was with other people. He had this real infectious laugh, and you couldn't help but laugh along with him when something funny happened. He paused, looking over the water. Anyway, 4 years ago, Scott and I had a basketball game, and it was my mom's turn to drive, so, like always, Mike came along with us. It had been raining all day, and a lot of the roads were slick. I should have been paying more attention, but Scott and I started playing Mercy in the back seat. You know that game? Where you try to bend each other's wrists in the wrong direction until one of you gives in? He hesitated, trying to summon his strength for the rest of what he had to say. We were really trying to get each other, wiggling and kicking the back of the seat. And my mom kept telling us to stop, but we ignored her. In the end, I got Scott just where I wanted, and I really gave it my all, and I made him scream. My mom turned around to see what happened, and that was all it took. She lost control of the car, and he swallowed, feeling the words choke him. Anyway, Mike didn't make it. Hell, without Scott, my mom and I probably wouldn't have made it either. We went through the guardrail and into the water. The thing is, Scott's an amazing swimmer, grew up at the beach and all that, and he managed to pull the three of us out, even though he was only 12 at the time. But Mikey, Will pinched the bridge of his nose. Mikey died on impact. He hadn't even finished his first year of kindergarten. Ronnie reached for his hand. I'm so sorry. Me too. He blinked back the tears that still came when he thought of that day. You know it was an accident, right? Yeah, I know. And my mom does too. But even so, she blames herself for losing control of the car, just like I know there's a part of her that blames me too. He shook his head. Anyway, after that, she's always felt the need to control things, including me. I know she's just trying to keep me safe, to keep bad things from happening, and I think part of me believes that, too. I mean, look what happened. My mom just completely lost it at the funeral, and I hated myself for doing that to her. I felt responsible, and I promised myself I would try to somehow make it up to her, even though I knew that I couldn't. As he spoke, he began to twist the macrame bracelet. What do the letters mean? IMTF. In my thoughts forever. It was my sister's idea as a way to remember him. She told me about it right after the funeral, but I barely heard her. I mean, it was just so awful to be in the church that day, with my mom screaming and my little brother in the casket, and my dad and sister crying. I swore that I'd never go to another funeral. For once, Ronnie seemed at a loss for words. Will straightened up, knowing it was a lot to take in and wondering why he'd even told her. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have told you all that. It's okay, she said quickly, squeezing his hand. I'm glad you did. It's not the perfect life you probably imagined, is it? I never assumed your life was perfect. He said nothing, and Ronnie impulsively leaned forward and kissed him on the cheek. I wish you didn't have to go through all that. He drew a long breath and resumed walking down the beach again. Anyway, it was important to my mom that I go to Vanderbilt, so that's where I'm going. I'm sure you'll have fun. I've heard it's a great school. He laced his fingers through hers, thinking how soft they felt next to his calloused skin. Now it's your turn. What don't I know about you? There's nothing like what you just told me, she said, shaking her head. It doesn't even compare. It doesn't have to be important. Just has to explain who you are. She glanced back at the house. Well, I didn't talk to my dad for 3 years. Actually, I started talking to him only a couple of days ago. After he and my mom separated, I was angry with him. I honestly never wanted to see him again, and the last thing I wanted was to spend the summer down here. How about now? He noticed the moonlight shining in her eyes. Are you glad you came? Maybe, she answered. He laughed and gave her a playful nudge. What were you like when you were a kid? Boring, she said. All I did was play piano. I'd like to hear you play. I don't play anymore, she said quickly, a stubborn edge to her voice. Ever? She shook her head, and though he knew there was more, she clearly didn't want to talk about it. Instead, he listened as she went on to describe her friends in New York and how she usually spent her weekends, smiling at her stories about Jonah. It felt so natural to spend time with her, so easy and true.
He told her things he'd never discussed, even with Ashley. He supposed he wanted her to know the real him, and somehow he trusted she'd know how to respond. She wasn't like anyone he'd met before. He was sure he wanted never to let go of her hand. Their fingers seemed to fit together in just the right way, effortlessly clasped like perfect compliments. Aside from the house that was hosting the party, they were completely alone. The strains of music were soft and distant, and when he looked up, he caught the brief flash of a shooting star passing overhead. When he turned to Ronnie, he knew by her expression that she'd seen it as well. "What did you wish for?" she asked, her voice a whisper. But he couldn't answer. Instead, he raised her hand and slipped his other arm around her back. He stared at her, knowing with certainty that he was falling in love. He pulled her close and kissed her beneath a blanket of stars, wondering how on earth he'd been lucky enough to find her.
Chapter 21. Ronnie. Okay, she admitted that she could get used to living like this. Lounging on the diving board in the backyard pool, an ice-cold glass of sweet tea by her side, a fruit tray in the cabana, which had been served by the chef along with real silverware and a fancy mint garnish. Still, she couldn't imagine what it must have been like for Will to grow up in a world like this. Then again, since he'd never known anything different, he probably didn't notice anymore. As she sunned herself on the diving board, she took in the sight of him standing on the roof of the cabana, getting ready to jump. He'd climbed it like a gymnast, and even from a distance, she could see the muscles flexing in his arms and stomach. "Hey," he shouted, "watch me do a flip." "A flip? That's it. You climb all the way up there and you're only going to do one flip?" "What's wrong with doing a flip?" he demanded. "I'm just saying that anyone can do one flip," she taunted. "Even I could do one flip." "I'd like to see that," he sounded skeptical. "I don't want to get wet." "But I invited you over here to swim." "This is how girls like me swim. It's also known as tanning." He laughed. "Actually, it's probably a good idea you're getting some sun. I guess the sun doesn't shine in New York, huh?" "Are you saying I'm pale?" she frowned. "No," he said, shaking his head. "That's not the word I'd use. I think pasty is a bit more accurate." "Wow, what a charmer. It makes me wonder what I used to see in you." "Used to?" "Yes. And I must say that if you keep using words like pasty when it comes to describing me, I'm not seeing much of a future for us either." He seemed to evaluate her. "How about if I do two flips? Will you forgive me?" "Only if you end the flips with a perfect dive. But if two flips and a big clumsy entry is all you can do, I'll pretend to be amazed, as long as you don't get me wet." He raised an eyebrow before retreating a few steps, and then taking one big step to launch himself in the air. He pulled himself into a tight tuck, spun twice, and went into the water, arms first and body straight, almost without a ripple. Now that, she thought, was impressive, if not completely surprising, given the graceful way he moved on the volleyball court. When he surfaced at the edge of the diving board, treading water, she knew he was pleased with himself. "That was okay," she said. "Just okay. I'd give it a 4.6. Out of 5? Out of 10, she said. "That was at least an 8. "Of course you think that. That's why I'm the judge." "How do I appeal?" he said, reaching up to latch onto the edge of the board. "You can't. It's official." "What if I'm not happy?" "Then maybe you'll think twice about using the word pasty." He laughed and began to pull himself up. Ronnie gripped the diving board. "Hey, stop! Don't do that," she warned.
"You mean this?"
he said, pulling down even harder.
"I told you, I don't want to get wet," she shrieked.
"And I want you to come swimming with me."
Without warning, he seized her arm and gave a tug. Squealing, she plunged into the water. As soon as she came up for air, He tried to kiss her, but she backed away.
No, she cried out laughing, relishing the briskness of the water and the silky sensation of his skin against hers.
I don't forgive you.
As she struggled playfully with him, she noticed Susan watching from the back porch. From the expression on her face, she was definitely not happy. Later that afternoon, as they were heading back to the beach to check on the turtle nest, they stopped for ice cream. Ronnie walked beside Will, licking her fast-melting ice cream cone, thinking how amazing it was that they'd kissed for the first time only yesterday. If last night had been almost perfect, then today had been even better. She loved how easily they shifted from serious to lighthearted, and that he was as good at teasing her as he was at being teased. Of course, he had pulled her into the pool, which was why she needed to time her reaction perfectly. It wasn't that hard since he didn't know it was coming, but as soon as he raised his own ice cream cone to his lips, she gave the cone a sharp nudge, smearing ice cream on his face. Giggling, she skipped off around the corner, directly into the arms of Marcus. Blaze was with him, as were Teddy and Lance.
Well, isn't this a nice surprise? Marcus drawled, tightening his grip.
Let me go, she cried, hating the sudden panic in her voice.
Let her go, Will added from behind her. His voice was unwavering, serious.
Now.
Marcus seemed almost amused.
You should watch where you're going, Ronnie.
Now, Will demanded, sounding angry, moving into view.
Take it easy, Richie Rich. She slammed into me. I was just keeping her from falling.
And by the way, how's Scott doing? Has he been playing with any bottle rockets lately?
To Ronnie's surprise, Will froze. Smirking, Marcus turned his gaze back to her. He squeezed her arms harder before finally releasing her. As Ronnie took a quick step back, Blaze lit a fireball, her expression nonchalant.
I'm glad I was able to keep you from stumbling, Marcus said. It wouldn't look good to be all bruised when you go to court on Tuesday, would it? You don't want the judge to think you're violent, in addition to being a thief.
Ronnie could only stare at him, speechless, until Marcus turned away. As they walked off, she saw Blaze toss him the fireball. She caught with ease and threw back to her. Seated on the dune outside her house, Will remained quiet as she recounted everything that had happened since she'd arrived, including the events at the music store. When she finished, she twisted her hands together in her lap. And that's all of it. As for the shoplifting I did back in New York, I don't even know why I took that stuff. It wasn't like I needed it. It was just something to do because my friends were doing it. When I went to court, I admitted everything because I knew I was wrong and that I wasn't ever going to do it again. And I didn't. Not there and not here. But unless the charges are dropped or Blaze admits what she did, I'm not only going to get in big trouble here, but I'm going to be in trouble back home, too. I know it sounds crazy, and I'm sure you don't believe me, but I swear I'm not lying. He covered her clasped hands with his own.
I believe you, he said. And trust me, nothing surprises me about Marcus. He's been crazy since he was a kid. My sister had him in a class, and she told me that the teacher once found a dead rat in her drawer. Everyone knew who did it, even the principal. But they couldn't prove anything, you know? And he's still up to his usual tricks. But now he has Teddy and Lance to do his bidding. I've heard some scary things about him. But Galadriel? She used to be the nicest girl. I've known her since I was a little kid, and I don't know what's been going on with her lately. I know her mom and dad got divorced, and I heard she took it really hard. I don't know what she sees in Marcus, though. Why she's so intent on ruining her life. I used to feel bad for her, but what she's doing to you is wrong.
Ronnie suddenly felt tired. I have to go to court next week.
Do you want me to come?
No,
I don't want you to see me standing in front of the judge.
It doesn't matter. It will if your mom finds out. I'm pretty sure she doesn't like me.
Why do you say that?
Because I saw the way she was looking at me earlier, she could have said.
It's just a feeling.
Everyone feels like that when they first meet her, he assured her. Like I said, once you get to know her, she'll loosen up.
Ronnie wasn't so sure. Behind her, the sun was dropping, turning the sky a bright shade of orange.
What's going on with Scott and Marcus? She asked.
Will stiffened.
What do you mean?
Do you remember that night at the festival? After he did his show, Marcus seemed all hyped up about something, so I tried to keep my distance from him.
It was like he was scanning the crowd. And when he spotted Scott, he got this weird look on his face, like he found what he needed.
Next thing I know, he had balled up his cup of French fries and hurled it at him.
I was there too, remember?
But remember what he said? It was odd. He asked if Scott was going to shoot a bottle rocket at him. And when he said almost the same thing to you just a little while ago, you sort of froze.
Will looked away.
It's nothing, he insisted, squeezing her hands.
And I wouldn't have let anything happen to you.
He leaned back, propping himself on his elbows.
May I ask you a question? Totally different subject.
Ronnie lifted an eyebrow, unsatisfied by his answer, but deciding to let it go.
Why is there a piano behind a plywood wall at your house?
When she seemed surprised, he shrugged.
You can see it through the window. And the plywood wall doesn't exactly match the rest of the interior.
It was Ronnie's turn to look away. She disengaged her hands and buried them in the sand. I told my dad that I didn't want to see the piano anymore, so he put up the wall. Will blinked.
You hate the piano that much?
Yes, she answered.
Because your dad was your teacher?
She looked up in surprise as Will went on.
He used to teach at Juilliard, right? It only makes sense that he'd teach you to play. And I'd be willing to bet that you were great at it, if only because you have to love something before you can hate it.
For a grease monkey slash volleyball player, he was pretty perceptive. Ronnie dug her fingers deeper into the sand, where the layers felt cool and heavy. He taught me to play from the time I was able to walk. I played for hours, 7 days a week, for years. We even did some composing together. It's what we shared, you know? It was something for just the two of us. And when he moved out of the apartment, I felt like he hadn't only betrayed the family, I felt like he betrayed me personally. And I was just so angry about all of it that I swore I'd never play or write another song again. So when I first got down here and saw the piano and heard him playing it every time I was around, I couldn't help feeling that he was trying to pretend that what he'd done didn't matter. Like he thought we could just start over. But we couldn't. You can't undo the past.
You seemed friendly with him the other night, Will observed.
Ronnie slowly pulled her hands from the sand.
Yeah, we've been getting along better in the last few days.
But that doesn't mean I want to play again, she said.
It's not my business. But if you were that good, then you're only hurting yourself. It's a gift, right? And who knows? Maybe you could go to Juilliard.
I know I could. They still write me. They've promised me they'll make room if I change my mind. She felt a surge of irritation.
Then why don't you go?
Does it matter that much to you? She glared at him. That I'm not just who you thought I was? That I have some special talent? Does that make me good enough for you?
Not at all, he said. You're still the person I thought you were, from the first moment we met. And there's no way you could ever be a better fit for me.
As soon as he'd said it, she felt ashamed of her outburst. She heard the sincerity in his tone and knew he meant what he'd said. She reminded herself that they'd known each other for only a few days, and yet he was kind and smart, and she already knew he loved her. As if sensing her thoughts, he sat up and scooted closer. Leaning in, he kissed her softly on the lips, and she was suddenly certain that she wanted nothing more than to spend hours and hours wrapped in his arms, just like this.
Chapter 22. Marcus. Marcus watched them from a distance. So that's the way it's gonna be, huh? Screw it. Screw her. It was time to party. Teddy and Lance had picked up the booze, and people were already arriving. Earlier, he'd seen a family of vacationers packing up their piece-of-crap minivan with their ugly dog and even uglier kids at one of the houses not three or four down from Ronnie's own piece-of-crap house. He'd been around long enough to know that the next rental wouldn't start until tomorrow, after the cleaners came, which meant that all he had to do was get inside and the place would be theirs for the night. Not so hard, considering he had the key and the security code. Vacationers never locked the door when they went to the beach. Why should they? It's not like they ever brought anything but food and maybe a few video games to the beach, since most of them stayed for only a week. And the out-of-town owners, probably from some place like Charlotte and tired of fielding calls from the security company when the idiots who rented the place set off the alarm in the middle of the night, had been kind enough to post the code right above the security pad in the kitchen. Smart. Real smart. With enough patience, he'd always been able to find a house or two to host a party, but the secret was not to abuse their opportunities. Teddy and Lance always wanted to party in these kinds of places, but Marcus knew that if he did it too often, the management companies would get suspicious. They'd send the managers by to check things out. They'd tell the police to make frequent rounds, and they'd warn the vacationers and owners. Then where would they be? Stuck down at Bowers Point like they usually were. Once a year, once a summer, that was his rule, and that was enough, unless he burned the house down afterward. He smiled. Do that and the problem was solved. No one would even suspect there'd been a party at all. There was nothing like a big fire, because fires were alive. Fires, especially big ones, moved and danced and destroyed and devoured. He remembered setting fire to a barn when he was 12 and watching it burn for hours, thinking he'd never seen anything more incredible. So he'd lit another one, this time at an abandoned warehouse. Over the years, he'd set a bunch of them. There was nothing better. Nothing made him higher than the power he felt with a lighter in his hands. But he wouldn't do that. Not tonight, because his past wasn't something he wanted either Teddy or Lance to know about. Besides, the party was going to be something. Booze and drugs and music. And girls. Drunk girls. He'd have Blaze first, and then maybe a